Good afternoon. Please be seated. The next case on the court's docket is the State of Nevada Department of Health and Human Services, Division of Public and Behavioral Health versus 8th Judicial District Court, and a real party in interest, Samantha Inc., DBA Samantha's Remedies, case number 67423. Counsel, ready to proceed? Okay. Good afternoon, Ms. Anderson.
Good afternoon. May it please the court, my name is Linda Anderson, and I represent the Division of Public and Behavioral Health of the Department of Health and Human Services. The division has asked this court to consider this writ to give some clarity to a very new area of the law concerning medical marijuana establishments. The division submits the Nevada legislature did not create a right for a petition for judicial review in this matter. If you look at your decision in the Private Investigators Board versus Atherley, the court looked at that issue and found that 233B does not apply to all decisions of an agency, only those that are a contested case. And clearly the legislature in this area did not create an administrative process. And when you look at the facts of this case, it actually wouldn't work very well on a practical level because this was a competitive process. For instance, in this case, there were 12 dispensaries allotted in the city of Las Vegas. And all of those would be competing against each other for that final spot. So the division was tasked with scoring those applications and ranking them so that only the top 12 would be issued. When you have a petition for judicial review, such as Samantha Remedies, they're the only one before the court. So the court is not going to be able to look at all of the applications. It also puts a hardship on the division to try to replicate that whole process again and ask the court to step into those shoes and look at all 12. We have had quite a few challenges from this process. Most of them have been in the form of a writ of mandamus, or even a complaint for declaratory and injunctive relief. That has allowed all the real parties in interest to come in. Just last week in the city of Las Vegas, Judge Kadish decided a writ from one of the competitors. Samantha Remedies was able to appear to file. So a petition for judicial review is just not the best vehicle on a practical level to give due process.
Well, in this particular case, is there an opportunity for a hearing at all or any adjudication at that level?
The only opportunity is to file either for a writ of mandamus or...
No, I'm talking about with your organization.
No, because of the expedited nature, the legislature basically gave a 10-day application period, requested us to make a decision within 90 days, and then issue the registrations within that period. So there is no time. I think there were about 500 applications that they were reviewing within that limited period of time. So, yes, the division has an interest in making sure those things are done correctly. That's always within our interest. But we don't have a vested interest in whoever is issued.
Right.
So that's why some of these challenges have gone forward when problems have been identified in the process, either through a writ of mandamus or a complaint.
Okay, so your primary point is this is not a contested case for purposes of judicial review, and there are other means of challenging determinations made by the board. And, in fact, that did happen in this case.
It has happened. There's still litigation pending for the city of Las Vegas. That's one of the interesting things is the competitive nature of this is within each of the local jurisdictions. So for a dispensary, there are only so many allotted to the state. There were 40 allotted in Clark County. This particular case is Las Vegas.
Got it. Okay.
So that is a unique situation. Usually when we're looking at licensing or those type of registrations, you're just determining whether the applicant themselves was qualified. In this case, we're having to rank and score so they can compete against each other. And that's what led to the nature of this. I think Samantha Remedies itself is struggling with the type of relief they're looking for. You'll see in their pleadings they talk about wanting to bring transparency to the process. Unfortunately, The legislature didn't create that transparency, we believe, through a petition for judicial review. In other words, they wanted an expedited process, they wanted things to move quickly, and they were very clear that they wanted this to be a revocable privilege. That being said, that would create a situation where you wouldn't be able to have every applicant being able to file a petition for judicial review. You could get multiple decisions from multiple courts all saying that that, in fact, should be a registering in the jurisdiction.
But you concede that other avenues of judicial review are open, not in the sense of administrative. For example, DEC relief, you think, is appropriate?
DEC relief, the division has proceeded with DEC relief. The city of Henderson, Judge Israel, awarded DEC relief. And why declaratory relief worked is because they weren't just looking at the application process. They were asking for an interpretation of the law. And that's where everyone else who was impacted by that could come forward and be parties to those proceedings. The real parties in interest could all come forward and have an opportunity, which made for a better and more meaningful view for the court because, for instance, in the Henderson case, the other applicant who had been provided a registration actually surrendered. So the issue became kind of moot so that their relief could go forward.
But the issue in this case seems to involve a dispute over how the division scored Samantha. And the score would or may impact a writ that would involve other people. But as a threshold question, if you can correct the score, that other litigation may not be necessary, right?
Well, except
because it could affect their ranking.
If we already have issued the 12 registrations, so if Samantha Remedy's score changed and put them in the top 12, that would mean one of those who had gotten a registration wouldn't be able to go forward. And so that's why the remedy becomes more effective, I believe, when you go through a writ where the real parties of interest could come in and argue, no, Samantha Remedy's score shouldn't be changed. The division did it correctly.
So instead what they should be doing is they should sue everybody who is involved in applying and just to get their own score fixed.
If they believe there's an error, that's partly what parties have done in this case, because, Justice, they're dealing with a revocable privilege. So they walked in, they've got to be able to make that more extraordinary relief issue. I understand that it would be typical that you would want to come in and look at the application process to see if there was an error, kind of a fishing expedition. I would submit that that's not what the legislature had in mind, either for petition or judicial review or anything else, or any of these other forms of relief. But you've got to come forward with an actual error that the division made and then bring it to the court's attention, allowing all the parties to come in and have that review for a meaningful review. Because otherwise, Judge Smith is going to be put in the position of having to look at Samantha's scoring, but how does that compare to everybody else's scoring? And those other parties and those other applications wouldn't be before the court in a petition for judicial review.
How discretionary is the board's authority in making the scoring determinations?
How discretionary is the division? I think they had complete discretion in making that determination, except that the legislature put forth specific criteria as to what factors would be looked at. But the legislature really delegated the decision-making process to the division.
They didn't indicate how you should weigh those factors, whether or not those factors were applied, or would be the nexus of the argument that an error was made.
And I think the court, though, without the guidance from the legislature, how would the court determine what weight should be given either? I mean, it becomes almost making a decision in a vacuum because Samantha Remedies did a very fine application. They scored 14th. They did very well on their application process. They probably answered things very well, but others answered it better and got more points. Mm-hmm. So it's really a weighing of the factors. Everybody qualified, which usually when you're looking at a petition for judicial review from licensure, you're making a determination that they didn't meet certain criteria. Here you're having to rank the criteria. And that's where I think the court wouldn't be in any better position to make those determinations than the division, and in fact would be at a disadvantage because they wouldn't be looking at all the applications before them. And if, are there any further questions?
Apparently not.
Thank you.
Okay. Ms. Maxson-Rushton.
Thank you. May it please the Court, I'm Kimberly Maxson-Rushton, appearing on behalf of Samanthas, Inc. At first blush, this case does appear to be relatively straightforward. Did the district court err when it denied the motion to dismiss the petition for judicial review filed by Samanthas, Inc.? However, based on the briefs and the supporting documents, I respectfully submit that this case raises significant issues of first impression. Specifically, can an administrative agency regulate around the obligation to afford procedural due processes and judicial review? Pursuant to Nevada's Administrative Procedure Act, specifically 233B.020, there is a legislative mandate that administrative agencies establish minimum procedural requirements for adjudication procedures and judicial review. Similarly, under NRS 453A, there is also a legislative mandate that the division adopt regulations not only specific to carry out the intent of the chapter, but also all other statutory requirements, specifically those I would submit contained within 233B. And therefore, the division has been derelict in its responsibilities to meet the statutory intent relative to the obligation to afford procedural due processes and judicial review to those who subject themselves to the jurisdiction of the agency. I also respectfully submit that the silence of the legislature with respect to not including judicial review specifically within 453A should not be the basis for denying a party ability to seek some type of review. It is clearly set forth in 233B and the tenets of 233B that administrative agencies develop some type of administrative review so that we can have transparency within the administrative review process.
If we deny the writ, what happens in district court? Tell me what's going to happen in the judicial review. What would happen for the petition judicial review?
So the petition for judicial review, Justice Cherry, is perfectly suited for administrative agencies because of the fact that it is less costly to the parties. It is less onerous in the sense that it does not have a broad implication, I think, than the other matters that have been brought or the legal actions brought against the state. And it puts the obligation on the petitioner to demonstrate that the agency's actions were infirm, that they were arbitrary and capricious, unconstitutional, beyond the statutory scope of their authority or procedure in error. And so in this instance, if the writ is denied and the matter is remanded back to the district court, then what the obligation will be for Judge Smith is to review the record and then thereafter make a determination whether or not the agency acted arbitrary and capricious. And when you consider the very high standards in which the legislature set forth for medical marijuana establishments, it cannot be foregone conclusion that you would not otherwise have a standard in which if an agency acted arbitrary and capricious, that operators would be allowed to dispense medical marijuana.
What happens to the lucky 12, though, the number 11 or number 12? What happens to those folks who have won the right to have the license?
So at the current time, there is no one operating with it that received one of the 12 within the city. And so they're still going through a quasi-compliance period whereby they're obtaining their special use permits and then they're also doing their business licensing. If the judge were to review this and determine, based on the record, that there was arbitrary and capricious actions, then he has the ability to remand it back and ask for a reevaluation of the actual application of Samanthas, Inc. That may move them down lower in the ranking or it could move them up higher. He can also look at the impact and then make a discretionary decision as to whether or not that is the right course of action.
I just want to ask one more question. Not just hurry. Would this be the speediest process for this? Because I don't think the county or city understands with all deliberate speed in this matter, since we're still waiting for more cultivation, more dispensaries, and everything else.
Well, the original intent as set forth by the division during the regulatory process is that the labs would be open first and then the cultivation, obviously so that you would have a supply to meet the demand and then lastly the dispensaries. So it would be an expedited review because of the fact that there is not a lengthy transcript to review. They can go through and easily determine whether or not arbitrary and capricious actions took place. But one of the key factors that I think should be noted for the court is the failure of the division to disclose the methodology under which they used to rank and score these applications. That lessens the transparency of the licensing scheme. And without that information, I would respectfully submit, it puts not only applicants in the future at peril because of the fact that they do not know what is to be expected and what the division will consider in determining or reviewing their application, but it also leads to a lack of transparency, as I've indicated, that is simply not within the scope of what administrative agencies should be doing in terms of fulfilling their declaration of purpose as set forth by the legislature.
But what you're seeking here is a judicial review of the agency's determination.
Yes, sir.
And in the purest sense of in looking at 233B130 and determining whether or not judicial review is appropriate, that consideration, part of the consideration, is whether you're aggrieved by the final decision in a contested case. And NRS 233B131 goes on to explain what a contested case is, and essentially it's having the opportunity for a hearing or where an administrative penalty may be imposed.
Yes,
and that's not the case here.
There was no hearing. This is not a contested case.
How does this comport with 233B and its requirements?
And I would respectfully submit that those provisions within 233B can be read in harmony with one another, because if the initial obligation of the division is met in that they have adopted regulations which allow for a system of judicial review, then you don't need to get to the point where 130 is no longer effective. Justice Perry-Gary, what could happen in that instance is, like other similarly situated administrative agencies, they're left to either create a system of judicial review or they're mandated to one as set forth by the legislature.
But in this instance, the legislature put a very restrictive time frame on them to make a determination. Wouldn't other avenues be available to you to test those determinations that are made? Relief.
Yes, sir, or a writ of mandamus. But in that instance, it's discretionary. And declaratory relief would not be applicable in this instance because of the fact that we're not seeking a clarification of a statute. What we're seeking for is a clarification of whether or not the actions of the agency were arbitrary and capricious and whether or not they met the legislative intent.
And why couldn't that be fleshed out in a writ proceeding?
Well, and that, again, is a discretionary determination. But it also doesn't lend itself, even if the court determined that the actions of the agency were arbitrary and capricious, whether or not it would lead to a remedy or a result for the petitioner or the individual seeking that relief. The system of judicial review, as contemplated by Nevada in the administrative procedure process, is one in which it should lend itself to being specific to the administrative agency.
Ms. Rushton, I understand the position you're making, but how do we distinguish ourselves from the cases of Private Investigators Licensing Board versus Atherley in terms of no judicial review being afforded in private investigator, and it's just not being a contested case? How do we distinguish that case in the instance you're asking for?
In that instance, in the PI board case, there was at least an opportunity for the applicant to be made aware of the deficiencies in their application. Why he had a hearing before a board in which they told him that his experience did not meet the necessary criteria.
But that hearing didn't move up to the next level of creating a contested case based on.
But you can read those cases, as I indicated, or those statutory provisions in harmony. If the administrative agency follows the mandates of the legislature and adopts regulations, then they can, in essence, comport with the implicit intent of the APA.
But if you're saying the mandates, likewise, would it not be considered a mandate if they did not choose to impose the contested case situation? I understand your argument about transparency. That's a policy decision for the legislature, not for the court.
Well, and I would disagree with that to the extent that there are rudiments of fair play in all administrative actions, and there should be in the court in multiple case holdings, as well as the U.S. Supreme Court has held, that there is a presumption in favor of administrative review.
Well, there's also an area when we get into privileges that they've taken a different look, such as gaming, where they basically tell the court, we review, the court, you should stay out of it.
After you exhaust your administrative remedies before the Nevada Gaming Control Board and the Nevada Gaming Commission, it does not strictly prohibit any type of judicial review.
But doesn't that presuppose the fact that if it's fleshed out in an administrative hearing of some type, where you have a contested case where there's an opportunity to be heard in a hearing, we have something to review?
You still have something to review relative to the methodology that they employed. Justice Perry-Gary, when you're talking about the medicinal benefits to patients in need, you're talking about the high standards set by the legislature. You cannot allow an administrative to make a decision in a vacuum. Cannot allow them to make a determination without even the mere disclosure of the methodology that they use. There is no way to determine whether or not the declaration of purpose as set forth by the legislature has been met.
But didn't the legislature set forth the factors they're to consider?
Yes, sir, they did. And then thereafter, the regulations further expanded upon those. But those standards are both subjective and objective, and then they were given a scoring and a ranking, and there's no determination or no way of or disclosure as to what that was based on. And so for future applicants, they have no way of knowing. For the applicant, for my client, Samantha Inc., they have no way of knowing why their application was ranked the way that it was, and no way of determining whether or not in an objective body determining whether or not that action was arbitrary and capricious. And so for those reasons, with all of the strong presumptions in favor of judicial review, my recommendation is that this court pronounce the fact that 233B.020 requires an administrative agency to adopt a regulatory scheme that affords some system of judicial review. And in that, they may either define it specifically consistent with the way their actions and their procedures is set forth by their current regs and their statutory authority, or they define their actions to be consistent with that of 233B.130 and identify it as a contested case of a final decision.
I may have misunderstood the beginning of your argument. I thought that you indicated that the source of the division's requirement to adopt a process or procedure for administrative review was contained in the statute that created the medical marijuana licensing scheme.
Yes, sir. There's two authorities. One is
what is the one in the medical marijuana statute that you say the division hasn't fulfilled?
That's under 453A.370, subsection 9. And it specifically states that the division is to adopt regulations to ensure that the tenets of the chapter are met in addition to other statutes. And I would respectfully submit that other statutes is a reference specifically to 233B.
So you're really advancing two arguments in the petition for judicial review. One is that the division failed to comply with that statute and enact a statutory and regulatory scheme for review of its decisions. And then secondly, review what actually was done.
Yes, sir, that is correct. And in addition to that, I think it's a critical...
It seems like the second would be hard to do for the district court judge without having any kind of parameters by which to gauge that decision.
Well, because of the fact that the state has been emphatic about their failure to disclose the methodology. Mm-hmm. And specifically, when requested, and Judge Smith did ask the specific question, they stated that it is an internal tool that was used and that by disclosing it, it could lead to all applications looking alike. And I would submit that that statement in and of itself demonstrates the fact that the division has taken the position that their authority pursuant to 453A is completely unbridled and without recourse.
Was there anything in the medical marijuana statutory scheme that declared that information or process or scoring system to be confidential
to
the division?
The statutory scheme specifically under 453A does deem that all of the applications are confidential. But that standard is also consistent.
Maybe I misstated the question. The scoring system, the process used by the division, was that declared in the statutory scheme to be confidential?
Not to my knowledge. It was the contents of the application. And then that specifically was a question that was raised by Judge Smith.
So part of your concern here is that the division is maintaining their process or their system or the factors that they used in confidence without a statutory basis for doing so.
Yes, sir. And in addition to that, there was also a concern that was raised by Judge Smith specific to the fact that at one point the state noted that even the issuance of a permanent certificate of registration could be revoked without notice, without hearing, and without any opportunity for reconsideration or review. And I would submit that that's contrary to NRS 233B.127.
Okay, any other questions for counsel? All right, thank you.
Thank you.
I think I had a few more minutes, and if I could just
address yes, of course.
Justice Hardesty's question. Counsel is correct. When this was first done, everything was made confidential. Anything that we did or produced from the applications would be. But this last legislative session in SB 446, the legislature specifically said that the tool being used would be confidential, not subject to subpoena or discovery. And it really does make sense, because if we release that tool, everyone will submit to us an identical application, and we won't be able to score.
You're talking about the evaluation tool.
So the evaluation tool.
So was the tool that was used with respect to the Samantha applicant the one in place before this past session of the legislature or since then?
This last session, they made clear that that would be confidential, but before that, we actually had a broader confidentiality. It was almost unworkable. They made every application, any document we created or came from the information of the application confidential. They lessened that confidentiality, but they clarified that part of that confidentiality continued to be that tool that was being used to rate them. Again,
so they narrowed it rather than it was broader, and then they narrowed it in this last legislation.
They narrowed it down, but they made very clear, and you could see the language, that it is a tool, is continues to be confidential. And again, this is the only way you could have a competitive process, which is why this particular situation is unique to any other Administrative Procedures Act. I would note that, yes, the division did not adopt regulations for a hearing process. They were not directed to. It would have been contrary to what the legislature had done. But we did have an open process, and no one came forward, all the applicants, to ask for a hearing process. So everyone who applied for these registrations should have been on notice that there was not going to be a petition for judicial review. The legislature was very clear, for instance, with the cardholders, they created a right to judicial review. So if you're a medical marijuana patient, you do have a right to petition the court directly. They did not use that same language with the establishments. And as counsel pointed out, even with revocation of an existing, they say immediately they don't provide for a due process right. This is consistent with their concept that it's a revocable privilege. And while establishments, some may not be completely operating, establishments have been going forward. The intent of the legislature was not to trample on the establishment's rights, but to meet the community's needs. In other words, to get this done as quickly as possible so these establishments could be up and operating. And that was their direction, maybe to a fault, because some of it has been so expedited that we haven't had the kind of process we would like. But in fact, the division was able to issue the sufficient number of registrations. If establishments are...
Let me pause for a moment. Just looking at the definition of in 233B.032 of contested case, it applies to a proceeding in which the privileges of a party, and the statute uses the word privileges, are required by law to be determined by an agency, and then after opportunity for hearing, or in which there will be maybe a penalty. So it seems to me what you're saying is that 233B.032, even though it applies to privilege determinations, is not broad enough because there's no opportunity for a hearing, because despite a statutory mandate to create regulations that would permit examination of or some predictability to this process, none were passed. And I'm struggling a bit, and help me out here, with the idea that the agency is meeting out privileges in a rank order of 1 through 40, and only 10 get or 12 get to play. How does anyone know that that was fairly done?
And Justice Pickering, there is a lack of transparency that the legislature put in here. But I want to clarify, regulations were adopted, and there was a very public process for those regulations. Okay. What the regulations didn't do was set up a right for a petition for judicial review. So they didn't set up a hearing process.
At the agency level, could you entertain the idea that the application itself on your form is sort of a written hearing, that you're requiring the applicant to respond to your questions? And in that sense, reading that most expansively, that is the opportunity for a hearing. So why should they not be able to come in under 233B032 and say, court, I did everything they asked for me and I was a perfect student. This was perfect application. Why can't they ask the court to look at that?
I would submit that is not a hearing, because that we did provide very clear as to what they needed to tell us, but we didn't provide, the legislature did not provide a hearing process to look at the ranking. So the scoring is the scoring, but they have to be able to rank these establishments, and the ranking has to be done in a competitive nature, in a comparison, and that's where I would argue the petition for judicial review is just not the effective vehicle to do that.
So an applicant couldn't even correct a math error?
That was the case last Tuesday, was to correct a math error, and that came forward, was done through a writ, and Judge Kadish granted the writ in that case.
She had a discretion to do it or not, whereas judicial review would have mandated it. So the standard's different.
But it is more consistent with a revocable privilege. Rather than a property right. With a property right, you expect the court to hear every time you file a petition for judicial review. With a revocable privilege, it does become discretionary on the court, but it allows those parties to come in and make that pitch to the court that they should be granted that.
Question?
Yes, of course.
Then why does 032 use the word privilege? The 233B032, I puzzled over that when I read it.
And they use privilege and they use registration.
No, 233B
actually uses the term registration, which is what we're talking about, which is even more clear than a privilege. So I did note that the privileges, registrations could be part of a 233B, but they have to provide opportunity for hearing. If you look at the chapter 453, the legislature clearly did not want to create such a right for due process in those terms. They did not create any hearing process. Even with an existing establishment, they say revoke immediately. So they used that terminology to try to make the point that there was not going to be a hearing process because they wanted to move these processes forward with a revocable privilege. They could have created a right, but then we would have had to have a lot more time to be able to handle all of those hearing processes that would go forward. That answers your question?
Sort of. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Counsel, thank you for your arguments today and your briefing. The case will stand submitted. We thank you for your participation here today.